testify in the
interview. Oh, we're live.
Oh, Mr. Chairman.
Oh,
we're on. Thank you.
Okay. Good morning. I'd like to open the House Committee on Business and Labor and call it to order for this Wednesday, February 3rd. We've got four bills on our agenda today, and we are going to go out of order and start with House Bill 4094. So I'll open a public hearing on House Bill 4094. Jan, can you give us a brief description, please?
On the original bill, this is a measure that exempts financial institutions providing services to licensed businesses in the marijuana industry from certain Oregon criminal laws. And it directs the OLCC and the OHA to provide, upon request, the financial institutions with information on the licensees or permit holders in the marijuana industry. And finally, it directs DCBS to do a study of any legislation or administrative action required to facilitate financing of businesses in the marijuana industry. It declares an emergency effective on passage. On OLIS, late last night, we posted a -2 amendment from Representative Reed, and he'll be talking to that.
And is there a subsequent referral on this bill?
No, there is not.
Thank you. With that, Representative Reed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, committee members. I'm Tobias Reed from Beaverton. I appreciate you hearing the bill today. I think it is an important one that allows us to help try to solve a problem. The voters of Oregon decided that we're going to proceed with the legalizing of marijuana and cannabis businesses, and I think it's clear that however one feels about that, that presents a number of problems, and I hope that we can all agree that duffel bags of cash are not a good thing. So what we're trying to address is the risk that creates both for business owners, communities, and public safety. I think this bill is an important step in the direction of trying to solve that problem. What we're trying to do is two things, reducing the risk and liability that's associated with the banking services and asking DCBS to help us find a longer-term solution. As your committee administrator ably summarized, the bill would remove criminal liability from state law for banks and credit unions who are providing banking services to legal cannabis businesses, which we think will make it easier for businesses to have a safe option to conduct their business and options for them to do that. It also asks DCBS to look at what options exist for us in the future. And I think that's important because even if the federal government begins to act, there's no clear timeline, and we'd like to assess our options as a state. The bill asks DCBS to report their findings before next year, January 1st, 2017. So I think this is a step. We think it would make it a bit easier as a result of the removal from criminal liability from state law. We'd like to figure out what our options are as a state, and hopefully we can continue to send a message to Congress that this is a problem we'd like them to address as well. As your committee administrator also mentioned, the -2 amendments are what we're working from currently. I was just made aware of a piece that was inadvertently left out of the -2s. I leave it to your choice whether we should try to address that here, or the folks who are particularly concerned about that indicated a willingness to try to address that on the Senate side. I don't think it's anything that's of any controversy, just a technical piece that we may have missed. And finally, I'd commend to your attention a letter that I believe is an OLIS from the OLCC, their involvement in developing this bill. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. I appreciate your testimony bringing the bill forward. Are there questions from the dais for Representative Reed? Representative Fagan.
Could you talk a little bit about when you were talking to me in my office about the challenges with the tax revenue and stuff? Because I think that's really particularly compelling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Fagan, the state actually will find itself in the same position, I think, as those who are working in the cannabis industry, because we have to deal with tax revenue, a lot of which may well be paid in cash. So we have the same challenges that the rest of the industry does, and it's important for us to have a clear sense of what our options are.
Representative Kinnemer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Reed, thank you for coming
thank you.
This morning and to my office yesterday. It was good to visit with you. We had a good conversation, and I guess, you know, I've had some longstanding concerns about the industry. But it's now legal, and it's producing huge duffel bags, as your expression, of cash, and that creates a whole series of new problems, and I appreciate a thoughtful solution to at least the managing of that money. And it also helps assure that appropriate business taxes are paid, and I think those are things that make this a viable and important bill.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, Representative Kinnemer, I don't want to oversell it. I don't know that this is the ultimate
final
solution,
answer.
But hopefully it moves us closer to it.
Yes, thank you.
Sam Doherty.
No, on the same lines, you know, it's not only the business taxes, which are set at a certain amount, but I kept thinking, how do you do W-2s for employees and all that kind of thing on a cash basis, which affects, you know, Oregon's revenue. So I think that to have some sort of a system and some sort of a system like this is needed, very needed.
Thank you.
So I don't know what the technical piece is. We don't have the fiscal to move the bill today anyway. If it's a rather simple piece that we could get our hands on very quickly, we might be able to turn it around if that would be your preference.
Mr. Chair, I think that might be a good idea. The Bankers Association will be better situated to comment on the very specifics of it, but in general terms, it has to do with the confidentiality of the information that that would go from OLCC, OHA, and DOR. We've listed some of those components, and we had talked with them, and I think that there is just a piece that didn't make it into the dash twos. We've been very fortunate to have really good back and forth with legislative counsel, so I'm hopeful that could be a really quick adjustment.
Well, we'll take that up.
Very good.
Thank you very much, and I'll turn you loose.
Thank you. I will stick around for a little while. My committee starts at 8:30, so I'm eager to hear the rest of your conversation. Thanks.
Great. So as I know there's a person here from over 100 miles away. Are you pressed for time?
No.
Because I'd like to go out of order a little bit, so I'd like to call up Linda Navarro next and Pam Levitt and Kevin Cole. Sorry. Good morning.
Good morning.
Welcome
Mr.
to
Chair.
The committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm Linda Navarro. I'm president and CEO of the Oregon Bankers Association and the Independent Community Banks of Oregon. And we're here today in support of House Bill 4094. Originally, I was here in support of the Dash 1 amendments. I'm just absorbing what are now the Dash 2 amendments in the bill we're working from. To begin with, the bill itself we support because we do think it's a step in the right direction to try to find a solution for banking marijuana-related businesses in the state of Oregon. We do support finding a solution. For obvious reasons, it's important that our state have the ability to provide banking to legitimate businesses and not to require them to operate in cash, which has its own set of problems. Unfortunately, there are some significant barriers at the federal level that prevent most financial institutions from engaging in this business. They're both legal and regulatory, and both really need to be addressed. And we're working both with our members of Congress as well as our regulators to try to find those solutions. Short of finding those solutions, there are a few things that can be done at the state level, and this bill does those things. One of which is address a criminal statute, which frankly I wasn't even aware of because we have been so focused on the criminal statutes at the federal level. So we appreciate that change, which certainly would be important to any financial institution that does take the risk of engaging in these businesses, in banking these businesses. The second, of course, is information sharing. A big part of being able to comply with the federal requirements, if you choose to go down this road, is having the information necessary to file the reports and comply with the regulatory requirements set forth by the Financial Crimes Enforcement Network and the banking regulators. So we think that's also helpful. The third piece, of course, is the study that DCBS would conduct. And as DCBS is also the primary regulator of state charter banks in Oregon, I do feel that's an appropriate place for that study, and we look forward to participating as a stakeholder in that process to see if there are any other solutions that we could provide at the state level. Again, I really want to emphasize that we're working hard to try to find a solution at the federal level. That's really the most significant and most important place to make the change. It's going to have the most impact. I would be disingenuous if I suggested that I thought this bill was going to dramatically change the number of financial institutions that are engaged in banking marijuana-related businesses at this point. It won't overnight, but it is a step in the right direction. With regard to the issue in the Dash 2s that Representative Reed raised, it's actually a change that was in the Dash 1 amendments. The final amendment in the Dash 1 amendments, which was to line 17 of the original bill, it added some language that is in Oregon law now that governs how a financial institution has to treat financial records for privacy purposes. And the original bill draft referenced the Bank Act, which doesn't cover all of the rules and regulations around how a bank or a financial institution has to treat financial records from a privacy standpoint. That was omitted, I think, inadvertently from the Dash 2 amendments, so we would like to see that in the bill that is moved. So I'd be happy to answer any questions. Thank you.
Great. I think we'll go ahead and listen to the credit unions, and we'll open up for questions.
Chair Holvey, members of the committee, Pam Levitt with the Northwest Credit Union Association. Thanks for having me this morning. We're here in support also of House Bill 4094. And with Linda, I just received the copy of the Dash 2, so we will be absorbing those, but I fully expect we will continue our strong support of the bill. The Northwest Credit Union Association did not take a position on the legalization of marijuana, but we do have a strong standing position on serving legal businesses in Oregon with strong financial services. And therein lies the problem with serving these businesses currently. There are several compliance and federal guidelines that are restricting financial institutions from going down this path. In my written testimony, I included some background for you. The Oregon legislature did pass a resolution to Congress asking Congress to address this issue. So you did that last session in 2015. Also, I included some information on Senator Wyden and Senator Merkley's bill, the Marijuana Business Access to Banking Act. There's a lot of work and discussion going on. I just want to commend Representative Reed for addressing what he believes and we believe can be some helpful additions to state law, state statute, to help financial institutions look at this as an option in the state of Oregon. I thought it best to bring an expert in this area from MAPS Credit Union, and I'll let Kevin present his testimony on their work in this business. Thank you.
Chair Holvey and members of the committee, my name is Kevin Cole. I'm the Chief Financial Officer at MAPS Credit Union, a Salem-based organization serving about 52,000 Oregonians. Our membership includes several OHA-licensed medical cannabis dispensaries. And although we serve these dispensaries under the guidelines established in the Cole Memorandum, we do so under the constant threat of legal and regulatory challenge. We support House Bill 4094 as a first step towards normalizing services to this industry. The protection under state law is an important provision, although, as Linda indicated, most of the activity that we've seen in other states has been brought under federal law, but we think it's an important message for the legislature to send regarding its position on the providing legal banking services to the cannabis industry. The second provision of the bill is extremely important to us. When you look at the requirements outlined in the Cole Memorandum with regards to due diligence on these businesses, the ability to obtain high-quality information is critical to be able to comply with those due diligence requirements. We are presently forced to get that information directly from the licensee or under a letter of authorization, and it weakens the due diligence process and adds burden to the licensee to have to provide this information that could be provided in a centralized manner through the OHA or the OLCC. Being able to request that information directly from the state regulatory authority is also deemed to be, under the Cole Memorandum, a valid source of data that we can rely on as due diligence. So this is a very important provision, and we appreciate the legislature helping us work on our compliance program by providing that opportunity. Another element of the information sharing provision that we would like to see would be the requirement for the disclosure of sales figures, as well as whatever eventually develops with the seed to sale inventory tracking, as this information is also important to running a high quality due diligence program. I don't believe that's specified in the draft 2, and I'm not sure if there's an appetite to tackle that, but in terms of being able to compliantly serve the industry, that would be useful for us as well. On behalf of MAPS, I would just really like to thank the legislature for addressing this issue. While we don't take a position on the merits of cannabis legalization, we feel very strongly that we should serve all of our Oregonians who want to legally conduct their business with a credit union. We made a significant investment to make it possible for us to serve this industry, and although Pam calls me an expert, I would hardly say somebody who's been, you know, actively working in serving the industry for about 8 months now hardly qualifies you as an expert. But from MAPS perspective, we view this not as a cannabis story, but as a credit union story, a situation where an underserved market developed and MAPS stepped in to meet the needs of the community to help build safer communities and provide services where there is no service currently. And by doing that, we hope to continue to allow them to provide a safe place to manage their funds and have the financial services that all businesses need to grow and prosper. And to Rep. Doherty's comment earlier, one of our largest sources of referrals is from payroll processing companies, because the dispensaries have very limited options in terms of being able to pay their employees without a banking relationship. With that, I'll be happy to answer questions from the committee.
Questions, Representative Widener.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is probably kind of a two-part. Linda, you might be the best for answering this, but you have your state charter and federal charter, and I'm just wondering about the banks, because the feds are basically where the worry is coming into and upsetting the apple cart. I'm wondering if this isn't something that we should be setting at a state level, or even setting up a payment process, even possibly where you swipe a card and it's dispensed through the basically they have to use a debit card to buy this or a credit card, then it goes into account maybe in the treasurer's office, and then he disperses the funds to the bank, and that way we wash the money essentially for the bank to protect them. So,
well, Chair Holvey, Representative Widener, it's, you know, the issue you're raising, or the idea you're raising, is actually akin to the ideas that we're hearing all the time. There's a lot of innovators in the payment space in particular that are looking for solutions that might be able to circumvent federal law. That's tough to do, because the payment system is governed by federal law, and the Federal Reserve is involved in most of the payments in this country, and that would likely be the case if the state were involved in the payment system as well. With regard, let me just address, I think, the question of state charter versus federally chartered institutions real quick, and then if I haven't gotten to the answer, I'd be happy to discuss further. In Oregon, for both credit unions and banks, and in every state, there are both state and federally chartered banks and credit unions. But all credit unions, regardless of state or federal charter, are governed by federal regulation and supervised at the federal level. They may also be supervised with their primary regulator at the state level if they're a state chartered credit union, but they also have regular exams. Banks, for example, typically have an exam every year to 18 months from the FDIC, regardless of whether they're a state chartered bank that's supervised by the state. So they're really bound to the same rules and regulations and supervision that a federally chartered bank is.
Chair Holvey and Representative Weiner, I was just going to add to Linda's comments that that's based on federal deposit insurance. So while there are state charter and federal charters, all credit unions and banks have the federal deposit insurance. So we have regulators coming in on both sides. So we are subject to federal regulations, even if you are a state charter.
Any follow-up?
Go ahead, follow up.
My point is I'm worried about the people that are depositing money into your bank that aren't there, and the feds come in and all of a sudden shut a bank down or start an investigation. Now how do I might have troubles getting my money out, and I'm not growing marijuana, things like that. So I'm worried about all the other people that have their money in the bank, and is there a way that we could kind of put a buffer in there where, like OLCC right now with liquor, everything's ran through their terminals and everything, and they know how much is being put into each store. And that's where I was looking at, okay, if we had a place at the treasurer's office where, okay, they have this much marijuana, this many ounces, they're swiping it, and we're controlling the inventory and all the sales, just like we do with liquor, comes back, and then they had sold 100 ounces, that's $100,000 or whatever it is. I have no idea these amounts. But then that goes to your credit union, your bank, and it came from the state. It didn't come from the marijuana sale, per se. So that way the feds, the only place they have to go after is they go after the state if they decide to do something.
Mm-hmm. Well, Chair Holvey, Representative Weiner, I think you raise a complex and important issue, and the good news is that this bill with this study component would allow a forum, I think, for us to debate and discuss the merits of that idea, as well as perhaps other ideas that could protect both marijuana-related businesses and the customers of financial institutions in general. So I look forward to tackling that. I'm certainly not in a position to be able to tackle it here today, but we can do that through the work group.
Representative Esquivel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. How are the other states handling this?
Chair Holvey, Representative Esquivel, we've heard a variety of stories and witnessed a variety of stories with regards to how folks are handling payments. In our dispensaries that we serve, we regularly encounter situations where the owner has an established credit card relationship through another business, and they will sometimes run their business cannabis sales through that terminal, which we cannot accept that money from them, and we have to tell them not to do that. We've had some folks try to use Square, and once they determine that they are a cannabis business, they lose that relationship. And so payments has been a significant challenge. The reality is the most common way that we're seeing our people handle their business is in cash. And from what we hear, that is the case in Colorado as well. We have dispensaries that have private security contractors deliver bags of cash to our branches. Fortunately, we believe that we have an armored courier who's agreed to start serving these businesses for us, so we will not have that risk. But there isn't a good solution presently, given the federal legal situation.
Thank you. Go ahead.
Representative Esquivel, I would add that, well, actually right now a call starting with my peers across the country to address this very issue, because, of course, it's a growing issue in a lot of states that have legalized marijuana for medicinal purposes, as well as the states that have legalized recreational marijuana. And it really is kind of like the Wild West. I mean, you're trying to figure it out. It's new, and I think new institutions and vendors that serve financial institutions are stepping into the space slowly. And we're starting to see some of these solutions. Institutions like MAPS here in Oregon, there are some banks in the states where there is legal marijuana that are serving customers as well. It's a small minority of banks, but it's growing. I would say that the entire marijuana industry or cannabis industry is totally underserved right now in every state where they have legalized the business, and that therein lies the problem that we're trying to address. We're certainly not alone in Oregon, and there's no, unfortunately, silver bullet in another state that we could adopt here.
Follow up, Mr. Chair.
Follow up.
I think we need to go ahead and proceed with this as best we can, because we're talking 40% of the states either have medical marijuana or recreational marijuana. That's 20 out of 50. So this problem's been hung around here, and no one wants to address it, it sounds like, or they don't know how to address it. But we need to get on the same page with the federal government and get something solidified.
I will comment, Chair Holby, and follow up to Rep. Widener's question. One of the reasons that, or your previous comment with regards to having the Treasurer's Department be able to track inventory and reconcile it to the sales, that is one of the reasons why making accessible the seed-to-sale inventory data for financial institutions is so important. We would be able to do that without burdening the Treasurer's office as part of our normal due diligence process. I will also share with the committee that we have a mock-up on a whiteboard in one of our offices at MAPS of a closed-loop payment system for the Oregon cannabis industry. That, you know, one of the challenges that we've heard with payments is that you can't cross state lines with those funds. And so, we've sort of brainstormed this idea of if you could actually build something that resides all within MAPS, given that we are the main institution serving the industry right now. We don't think it's feasible, but there are lots of entrepreneurs out there with ideas that are similar to that may provide some technical solutions to this that aren't in the current sort of known universe of payment products.
So I have one speculative question for you that I don't know if you have an answer for. If the state were to actually start operating like a bank, as Representative Widener suggested, would they be subject to the same federal regulations that your institutions are?
Chair Holby, I could attempt to tackle that and just say that for the most part, but it would depend on what the state engaged in and considered a banking service. If it was what is traditionally considered a banking service, certainly having any kind of insured deposit would put the state in that space. Trying to access the payment system and the Federal Reserve, having a window at the Federal Reserve, all of that would put the state in the same boat, I think, as a supervised financial institution. Now, as to whether there are some things that are banking related that the state could do either in the short or long term to serve certain aspects of the cannabis industry, maybe. And that's what I understand from my conversations with Pat Allen at DCBS is part of what the work group is going to be looking at. But I don't think the state can just form a bank that in the definition we consider a bank and begin providing these services without running into the same barriers that other financial institutions.
Not sure the state would want to run that risk. But thank you so much for coming forward this morning. Appreciate your testimony. Up next, Brian Doherty and Ken Burke. And can we have Sam Chapman also come up? Good morning.
Good morning, Chair Holvey, members of the committee. My name is Brian Doherty. I'm with the Miller, Nash, Graham & Dunn Law Firm, and I'm here representing our client, PayQuick. Ken Burke here is the CEO of this company. I think he is has a very interesting platform that tries to address many of the questions I've heard from the panel here today. I also have provided some written materials that include PayQuick's business plan, as well as an article from the state of Washington explaining their successful entry into the Washington market as a money transmitter, which and is working with two banks in Washington, both of whom have passed FDIC audits related to the handling of the money. And I think it has a lot to do with the robust way in which PayQuick is able to get essentially a, if you want to call it a PayPal account, but it is a working method to get the duffel bags out of this business. And with that, I'll turn it over to Ken Burke and be able to give you some ideas of the model. And then we talk a little bit about the Dash 2s. We think that there was an effort to get the money transmitter included as the financial institutions. A money transmitter is not a financial institution, but is licensed by the state. And PayQuick, at least, is licensed with the state with the federal treasury. But why don't I let Ken tell you a little bit about this program. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chairman Holme, members of the committee. Thank you for allowing me to testify today. My name is Ken Burke. I've been a practicing lawyer in California for 29 years. We saw the need in this industry. We also described it as the wild, wild west with all the cash. And we started doing our research on different state laws, and we found that Washington had a very robust seed-to-sale traceability system. And we realized that if we take that seed-to-sale traceability system and we reverse engineer it, we can trace the money from sale back to seed, which will make it compliant for, in connection with the FinCEN guidelines for deposit into any financial institution. We went to Washington, and we got our money transmitter license, and with the help of Rick Riccobono, the director of banks at the Washington Department of Financial Institutions, we were able to establish relationships with two community banks in Washington to bank us and to bank our marijuana business clients. We do all of the cash management, and we do all of the know-your-customer due diligence required under the Bank Secrecy Act and under the Anti-Money Laundering Control Act. Currently on our platform in Washington, we have 1,000 consumers using the platform, and we have 125 marijuana businesses that are either using our platform or going through our due diligence process and become an onboarding. So far, since October, we've processed $3.8 million through our platform. So that's $3.8 million in cash that we've taken out of the system. As he mentioned, our banks have been through their FDIC audits. And I want to make it clear, we don't, with our payment processing platform as a money transmitter, we don't try and circumvent state law, federal law. We comply with federal law. We have the most robust Bank Secrecy Act and Anti-Money Laundering Control Act compliance program that's out there serving the marijuana industry. We've applied for our money transmitter license here in Oregon. We've been through two rounds of follow-up questions with the DCSB, and we've been told that our money transmitter license will issue here in Oregon any day now. The other thing I wanted to mention is that with our platform, businesses can pay their excise taxes electronically as well. So you won't have the need for duffel bags full of cash to be dropped off to be paid. In fact, in Washington, they built the Liquor and Cannabis Board in Washington built a bulletproof booth to receive the money. And we've been told the largest deposit so far was $225,000 in a suitcase in cash. So with our platform, we allow our businesses. I don't even know what that looks like. But with our platform, we enable them to pay their taxes electronically. And with that, I would like to open up to any questions that you may have.
We'll go ahead and hear from the third gentleman first.
Chair Holvey, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Sam Chapman, and I'm with New Economy Consulting, which is a cannabis consulting firm based in Portland, where we work with entrepreneurs, investors, and governments on crafting and navigating rules and regulations for the industry. Back in 2013, I was also one of the co-authors of House Bill 3460, which is the law that we know today to have legalized medical marijuana dispensaries. And so to be here today is very exciting and having and starting this conversation and moving forward. I'll keep my comments very brief. I only have three main points here. One is one that has already been brought up by Representative Fagan in terms of the state is now in the same boat as the industry. State employees are handling cash, will be handling cash from what is unfortunately still a Schedule I drug at the federal level. So in terms of Representative Widener's idea, in terms of the state getting involved and what the liabilities would be, we already have that liability. It's here. I'm not sure it would be much different if we were to provide something that would create additional hurdles and provide more public safety for the people of Oregon and the people in the cannabis industry. And so those are definitely ideas that we have been having with stakeholders, such as the community credit unions that have testified, with other legislative offices. The idea of a depository has been floated. That's something that we're going to continue to explore, and I think that the research and survey aspect of this bill is really going to empower the state to look deeper from an internal perspective as to what the potential temporary options might be until the federal government decides to move forward on making these reforms. Secondly, I wanted to add another stat that I had recently gotten as early as this morning from a source at the Washington Liquor and Cannabis Board, and that there's a similar bill, I think that has a hearing today in Olympia, to allow for electronic payment services to happen, not just to what we're talking about here, for but people to pay their tax to the state online. And so that's another option that people have, you know, by utilizing things like PayQuick to be able to take that money out of the physical aspect and allow it to be made transferable electronically. The Washington Liquor and Cannabis Board has said that they are taking in $4 million per month in cash. Again, I can't even represent physically how much cash that is, but it's a lot, and you can expect that Oregon is going to be something similar to that. It may not be as much as 4 million simply because our population is smaller, but it's still a lot of cash. I think that's actually all I have for now. I'd be happy to answer any questions that you may have, and wanted to thank you and Representative Reed for hearing us today.
Questions?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Widener.
Thank you. Just to kind of follow up on what you're saying, it's not just the protection of the cannabis, but I'm worried about the people who aren't involved with this at all and their money getting tied up because of something happening. That's why the depository or some form like that kind of makes sense. That's why I was saying the treasurer's office or someplace basically to do. I didn't realize we had a professional cleaner in the room, but somebody, an attorney figured out how to clean the money.
Right.
And put it into the system, so he's taking care of one of the issues I talked about, and that's
right.
The state, I know their hands are already on it, so right. Let the feds come bust the state and protect everybody else in this.
Sure, so, absolutely, and to clarify, I completely agree. Public safety as well is a huge concern, and to my knowledge, and I'd be happy to hear from other people if they disagree, but when a cannabis account is found out at like a U.S. bank or a Wells Fargo, typically what happens is I'm not aware of any scenarios where cash has actually been confiscated unless something illegal has been discovered, like blatantly illegal within state law. Typically what happens is those institutions will give them 30 days or some amount of time to pull their money out and then shut down their account. So I have not heard of any instances at this point to where other people's money has been jeopardized or even the industry themselves having money taken away from them. It's not to say it won't happen, but I'm not aware of any cases in which that's happened yet.
I just might mention, Chair Holvey, the SAR, the suspicious activity records that they have, there are three that the feds have, and I think Ken can talk about it, but they file it on everything in the marijuana transaction business. But why don't you tell them a little about that?
Sure. So, one, to echo his point, that's correct. No one else has lost their money. What happens is they give them 30 days to close their account. They give them a check for whatever the balance is in their account, and guess what? They've got no place to go put that check. So that's the quagmire that they find themselves in. Under the federal guidelines, you file what's called a suspicious activity report. And under the FinCEN guidelines, there are three types of suspicious activity reports. There's a marijuana limited SAR, a marijuana priority SAR, and then a marijuana terminating SAR. The marijuana limited SAR is for the garden variety deposit of money from a marijuana transaction. We file those SARs. a marijuana priority SAR is when your due diligence, your know your customer due diligence, says there's something funny about this money. We need to look a little bit further, and you file what's called a marijuana priority SAR. And then if you really think something is wrong and this business is violating one of the 8 enforcement priorities in the Cole memo, you file what's the marijuana terminating SAR. So PayQuick, our business, because we're registered federally as a money services business, we file all of those SARs on every dollar that comes into our platform. So far, knock wood, we have not had to file any marijuana priority or terminating SARs, but we have filed all of the marijuana limited SARs.
Thank you. Appreciate your testimony this morning.
May I just, Mr. Chair, I'm not going to talk on, just we do have some issues with the dash twos. We just got to them. We're trying to make sure that the money transmitter is defined like a financial institution because they're providing that type of research and background checking on these businesses. Thank you.
Thank you. And if you could check with Representative Reed's staff, who's still sitting in the room here, so we can figure out what that looks like to fix that issue, if we can.
Thank you very much.
That would be
helpful.
We do the exact same due diligence that the banks do, so that's why we would also need that information.
Yeah. So we'll follow up with that with DCBS as well, I assume. So thank you very much. And I know we have one more person to testify on this, but we'll resume that in a minute. I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 4094 and open a public hearing on House Bill 4038.
Mr. Chair and committee members, this is a measure that permits shareholders and members of cooperative corporations to vote by electronic means, and it declares an emergency. You have a proposed dash one amendment that just adds that in addition to the bylaws that would allow a ballot to be sent by mail or email, the member must also consent to voting by such means.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Welcome to the committee. If you'd introduce yourself for the record.
Thank you, Chair Hildy. I'm Representative Peter Buckley, representing South Jackson County in the legislature. The bill brought before you today is at the request of the Ashland Co-op. It's one of our most successful businesses in the city of Ashland. It has decades-long success in attracting members and presenting for the community a really marvelous offering of organic fruits and vegetables, just a great, great grocery store. Next time you're down in Ashland, come on over. They have a great deli, too. But their board of directors contacted me and asked whether I could clarify a co-op's ability to have an election via email, if that worked for their members. And checking with Legislative Council, they said, we think you can. It would be better if you could clarify that cooperative elections could be done via email. So that's what this bill does. It simply makes it clear in statute that a co-op, if it so desires, could hold their membership or their board elections via email. They would still be required, the amendment that we're offering with the bill would clarify that they would still have to get the permission of their members to accept their ballot via email. So a member would still get a notice in the regular U.S. mail or a ballot in the U.S. mail unless they tell the co-op they would like to vote by email. The co-op believes that this is going to save them time and money in their membership elections, and I hope that you will look with favor upon this bill. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much. Appreciate your testimony. Representative Barton, do you have a question?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Buckley, thank you for bringing this forward. I always thought that they could, under existing law right now. Is it your understanding that they probably can, but this is just to clarify to make absolutely certain that we can?
Chair Hovey, Representative Barton, that's correct. Elsie had the exact same comments. She said, we think you probably can, but probably best just to get it clear.
Great.
Thank you. I appreciate that. See any other questions for you? I guess you can go do some other work if you appreciate it. Like,
I'll try to find something to do.
Yes, yeah, try to find something to do, please.
Yeah. I think Mike may have signed up on the wrong bill from the Craft Brewer Alliance. He didn't want to testify on this bill, right? Okay. We'll go ahead and listen to Greg Peden. Is he still there? Real briefly on this one.
And when you get
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Greg Peden here on behalf of the Rural Electric Cooperative Association. Just wanted to briefly testify, since some of you have some of our member co-ops in your districts, that we are okay with this bill. We've got some members who've looked at electronic voting, but their work is sort of preliminary. But we have no objections or concerns with the bill, or I think there's an amendment being considered as well that we would be fine with as well. That's it for me. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Peden. Brevity is a virtue. Any questions, Mr. Peden, before he's already, now that he's
before
left,
he's probably going to be
on the quick question for him, just on principle.
Should we mail it to him?
Certified, please.
That's good.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Peden. And that wraps up all of our public testimony on House Bill 4038. We're going to close that public hearing. We're going to reopen the public hearing on House Bill 4094, and I think we had one more, and that would be Rick Blackwell from DCBS. Come on up, Rick. Thank you for your patience as we went out of order.
Oh, of course.
Representative Buckley trumps us all.
Including myself.
Some ways, yes.
Thank you, Vice Chair Barton and members of the committee. I'm Rick Blackwell. I'm with the Division of Financial Regulations, the new division that includes the old Division of Finance and Corporate Securities. I'll just be really brief on House Bill 4094. We obviously will look forward to crafting a report with stakeholders on this issue of banking cannabis proceeds. Our interest, I think, is making sure that the institutions that have decided to take on this line of business are have the appropriate policies and procedures in order to make sure they're looking at the backgrounds of the business and doing their due diligence under law. So to the extent that they can get information from the OLCC and other regulators about who they're dealing with, that will facilitate our examination process. As you know, as you heard from the previous testimony, we examine state-chartered banks and credit unions. So we also are going to need that information. So indirectly, this will impact us. I do want to say we've also tried to seek clarity in federal law where we can as well. We also, the Marijuana Business to Banking Act, we actually signed a letter of support on that measure that went to Senator Merkley. That was about last year. Otherwise, I think I can just take any questions you might have.
Thank you. Mr. Blackwell, I have a quick question for you.
Yes.
Forgive me because I'm just slower than some.
Sure.
If you could distill up the position of DCBS, that is to say, do you have a formal position? Admittedly, we don't have the amended language in front of you, but conceptually.
Yeah. Obviously, we have no position on any bill without the permission of the governor's office. We're still, I think, like everyone, reviewing the -2s just to make sure that there isn't any unintended consequences. But
gotcha.
We'll certainly work with everyone involved.
Thank you. Any questions, Mr. Blackwell?
You're off the hook.
Thank you very much.
You.
And just in time, the chair is ruining my fun. I'm going to close the public hearing at House Bill 4094. And the gavel's back to you, Mr. Chair. We finished 4038 and just finished 4094.
Thank you for your diligence. I'd like to open a public hearing on House Bill 4053.
Mr. Chair and committee members, this measure expands the retail opportunities for brewery licensees to include retail sales of malt beverages, wine, and cider for consumption on or off the licensed premises, for selling wine, malt beverage, and cider in growlers, to holding special events licenses, and for holding a full on-premises sales license, which allows the sale of distilled spirits. It limits the brewery licensee and certain persons connected to the licensee to selling malt beverage at retail to 3 locations, regardless of the number or type of licenses held. You have a proposed -1 amendment that is from the committee, and it establishes a $10 fee for the special events brewery license, and it requires the special events brewery license holder to maintain liquor liability insurance or to maintain a bond. And there's a minimal revenue impact on the -1 and a minimal fiscal impact on the -1 as well.
And no subsequent referral.
And there's no subsequent referral.
Thank you. Paul Romaine. Who would like to come up with him? I got Nikos Ridge, Marcus Reed, Mike Vargas.
O'Connor?
O'Gorman.
O'Gorman.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Paul Romaine. I'm with the Romaine Group, lawyers in Portland, and we are representing the Oregon Beer and Wine Distributors Association. We talked to you earlier at a previous meeting about the process to put this bill together. Again, compliments to the chair, but real compliments to the committee administrator for actually coordinating this whole thing. This was a very good process, basically. Everybody got together. Everybody had their different views, and we went through various iterations. And what we came up with was 4053, which is before you. The Dash 1 amendments are acceptable to us. That's a good addition that we did not think about. I just want to clarify just a couple of things in 4053. The only thing that kind of came up is over the definition of common control. And what you see in 4053 is a definition where we tried to pin down what common control was, but also leave a little bit of flexibility for the regulating agency, the Liquor Control Commission, to at least think about different scenarios where somebody might come up with a unique way to control another entity. We think that 4053 gives that control to the Liquor Control Commission. What it doesn't do is it doesn't prevent one brewery from having a couple of board members on another brewery's board, so long as they don't control the thing. They could have, you could have a 7-member board, 2 be from another brewery. That's fine. But they probably couldn't be the chair of the board if they could direct the management. They couldn't be a majority of the board, that kind of thing. That's the kind of flexibility you want. You also don't want a situation where, by contract, one brewer controls another brewer's operation. And again, this bill gives the OLCC the flexibility to say no to that kind of situation. This bill is a good bill. We worked well with everybody concerned, the Brewers Guild, a lot of individuals, and we think it's a good bill, and we think you should pass it. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Marcus Reed. I'm the General Counsel of Craft Brew Alliance, also known as Widmer Brothers Brewing. Mr. Romaine summed up the sort of collaborative effort that this process has been, and through that effort, most of our concerns have been addressed. The only remaining concern was exactly what Paul mentioned, which is the definition of common control. Specifically, there's some language regarding the authority to direct the management of a brewery licensee or another manufacturer. The problem with that is exactly as Paul said, you could potentially have a situation where you have one director or maybe multiple directors who don't constitute a majority of the board, and yet they are interpreted as having some kind of authority to direct management. There was a Dash 2 amendment proposed a couple of days ago, might have been yesterday actually. That amendment, we felt, addressed that pretty well. It made the definition of common control very narrow, very easy to interpret. But we do acknowledge Mr. Romaine's concerns with having the amount of flexibility that OLCC might need in its interpretation. So we feel that as long as it's clarified on the record that a single director or multiple directors who don't constitute a majority of the board and don't have that actual control over the board, as long as that situation is not declared common control, we'd be comfortable with not objecting to the bill.
Thank you.
Chair Hulvey, members of the committee, thank you for hearing me today. My name is Nikos Ridge. I'm co-founder and CEO of Ninkasi Brewing Company. I also had the privilege to be part of the working group that was put together to craft this bill. I echo the comments. I think it was the group itself was a positive step forward for our industry, and I think it was a great process. The result is the bill that you see. I think it does a lot to help to simplify and clarify some of the different privileges within the different types of licenses, within the different tiers in our industry. The manufacturing, the wholesale, and the retail tier. So I think it's a great step forward, and I encourage you to pass this. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. And I will agree that it is the intent of this committee, for the record, that I am in agreement with what you've put on the record about the board of directors. If they don't represent a majority of the board, that would not constitute that authority to direct the management. So that would be my interpretation as well. Happy to put that on the record as well as on the floor as we move this forward. So, but I am, you know, happy that you felt that the dash two that we came up with at last minute actually did it, but recognize Mr. Romaine's abundance of caution and how it might be best to, you know, let the OLCC have a little bit of flexibility here. So I appreciate the work group. Representative Doherty.
And I don't know if this is premature, but there was a letter dealing with wine included in the like growlers and this sort of thing with the breweries. Has that been dealt with? Or I didn't read the dash twos, so I didn't know if that was. I thought we were talking about breweries and not wineries. So.
Mr. Chair, Representative Doherty, the wine growers are a little not unified on growlers. And I think what you did is you got a letter from one wine group mm-hmm. that doesn't necessarily like growlers for wine, but that does not reflect, I believe, the view of the Oregon wine growers. That issue has not been touched in this bill. It allows brew pubs and brewers to have growlers.
So they have wine on the premises that they can
use
growlers.
They could have a growler. You could have a growler. The big issue, a lot of, I don't know how much detail you want on it, but there's an issue within the wine community of whether that's a growler is a good thing or a bad thing for wine, and that's not covered in this bill. We don't want it covered in this bill. We just want people, if they want to have growlers, let them have growlers.
Well, I think you answered my question that in the breweries they do have wine also. So
yeah.
That was my question, so not necessarily the growlers. Thank you.
And I'll just comment that Dan Jarman was in this work group from the Oregon Wine Association and was advocating for the piece that would allow the breweries to sell that wine.
Thank you.
So, any other questions for this group? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I appreciate you being here. Didn't know whether Mike wanted to testify on this.
No,
he's good. How about Jesse? Can you come up for just a second? I know you really hate to do this, but.
Thank you, Chair Holby. For the record, my name is Jesse Sweet, Senior Policy Advisor with the Oregon Liquor Control Commission. I was pleased to be able to participate in the work group that was convened in the interim. The agency can't take an official position on the bill, but I think it was a great process and happy to be involved. Would you like me to speak specifically to the issue of common control?
Yes, I just wanted to, as we're establishing that record, I wanted to make sure that the OLCC was, informed about this and didn't have issues with what we're putting on the record in terms of the minority position of board of directors on a manufacturer or brewery licensee.
Yes, Chair Holby, the OLCC has been informed, and we do not have issues. We distinguish between participation in the management and direction. So direction would, in my mind, constitute either a majority of board seats or a minority that has a controlling interest, for example, the chair, or perhaps some other arrangement which we haven't been able to conceive of where a brewery could exercise control via contract or other instrument.
So I would assume that you might do rulemaking on this to clarify some of this in the future?
Chair Holby, yes, we'll do rulemaking as necessary. I mean, this is a new issue for the agency. There are currently approximately a dozen licensed breweries in the state of Oregon. So we don't have a real good handle on how much work this is going to be for the agency, but we don't think it's going to be significant.
Thank you. Appreciate being here. Any other questions for the OLCC? Seeing none, thank you very much. Mr. Jarman, did you care to testify on this bill? There was a question about the winery piece in the bill. I think we received, Representative Doherty had a question about the winery piece
well,
in the bill.
And as a clarification, you can see how much I hang around brew pubs. I didn't know they sold wine. So, and that was the question with the ID, because when I saw that, I thought, well, brew pubs just sold beer, but apparently they also sell wine. Mm-hmm. So it's more on my part. I guess I have to hang around breweries more often.
Yeah. Dan Jarman with the Oregon Wine Growers Association. We appreciate the chair and the sponsors of the legislation inviting us to the table to join in the work group conversation. We didn't have a very major role in that. It was mostly to kind of watch. We certainly don't have any problems with what the work group has come up with in this legislation. I did just see something that was submitted by the Wine Institute, and this is the organization that represents California wineries, which is obviously different than the Oregon Wine Growers Association representing the Oregon wineries. I was not contacted by them before today and just saw their opposition letter about 3 minutes ago, where they have expressed concerns about having wine growlers in breweries. We don't share that viewpoint. We believe that consumers having more access to Oregon wines is a very good thing. So I will talk with the lobbyists for the Wine Institute and try to understand a little bit better their position, but it's something that we don't share.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate getting that. Any questions for Mr. German? Not seeing any. Thank you very much. I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 4053. And let's open a work session on House Bill 4053. Representative Barton, I'd like to adopt the Dash 1 amendment.
Chair Holvey, I move the Dash 1 amendment to House Bill 4053.
Representative Barton moves the adoption of the Dash 1 amendment to House Bill 4053. Discussion? Seeing none, is there any objection? Seeing none, the Dash 1 is adopted.
You want to move to the floor, Mr. Chair?
Yes, please.
Chair Holvey, I move House Bill 4053 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Barton moves House Bill 4053 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Recommendation, excuse me. Discussion?
Good idea.
Seeing none. Ashley, could we have a roll call vote, please?
Representative Barreto?
Aye.
Representative Doherty?
Aye.
Representative Esquivel?
Aye.
Representative Evan?
Yes.
Representative Fagan?
Yes.
Representative
Hurd? Aye.
Representative
I'm excited. That's
aye.
My first vote.
Representative Widener?
Aye.
Vice Chair Barton?
Aye.
Vice Chair
Kinnemer?
Aye. Chair Holby?
Aye. House Bill 4053, having received the required votes, is passed. And I'll carry this one on the floor. With that, I'll close the work session on House Bill 4053 and open a public hearing on House Bill 4117.
Mr. Chair, committee members, this is a measure that eliminates the requirement that the Landscape Contractors Board offer a practical skills test option for persons applying for a landscape construction professional license or any limited or specialty license, and instead would require the board to offer a practical skills test option for at least two types of limited or specialty licenses. And it reduces the schedule for offering the practical skills test. It also allows the practical skills test to include a written multiple choice question exam, and allows the business practices class to include a test, but it prohibits the board from considering the test results as a condition for issuing or refusing a license. Declares an emergency effective on passage, and there are no amendments, there's no revenue impact, and there's a minimal expenditure impact.
Representative Hurd, and anyone that would like to join you.
Dangerous. Actually, I'm going to sit to the left.
Tammy, you're not coming up.
Okay,
go ahead.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Chair Holvey and committee members.
We should have Representative Hurd go first, if you would like.
I thought you wanted me to kick off. Go ahead.
Actually, I'd rather just let the director go for the most part, Mr. Chair. I basically just wanted to say, well, this is her first time that she's actually had to testify in front of a committee. And
oh, you're going to sit
since
down
since I'm
there
the source of her pain.
And make sure she doesn't make any mistakes.
I'm pretty confident she's less around, likely to make sure mistakes than myself.
I was going to say, I think maybe you should come back up here. No.
Representative Hurd has successfully ruined her testimony already.
Should I just leave?
Mr. Chair, I would assume this does not preclude us the idea that we can ask Representative Hurd questions, though.
This you does may, not. He's. We can ask him all the questions we want as long as
thank
he's sitting
you
there. I'm sorry. So go ahead and introduce yourself for the record, please.
Chair Holvey and committee members, my name is Elizabeth Boxall, and I am the administrator for the Landscape Contractors Board. Passage of House Bill 3304 in 2015 posed some challenges for our semi-independent agency, specifically in terms of financial and human resource constraints. And based on the work of industry committee members, including Representative Hurd, we came up with solutions which are outlined in the bill before you. Most significant to mention is that the Oregon Landscape Contractors Association, called OLCA, has offered our board leverage of their current annual hands-on certification exam, commonly referred to as the CLT, which is the Certified Landscape Technician, which is given annually in July. The implementation committee that was formed compared the LCB written exam to OLCA certification exam, identified gap areas, and based on this made the request reflected in the bill. We appreciate OLCA's willingness to help the LCB to meet this requirement and Representative Hurd's time and support to help advocate for an iterative approach that will allow successful implementation and allow licensees the opportunities really intended. Bottom line, it narrows the initial scope a bit, accelerates our timeline actually to have to meet this in for this July of this year, but allows an iterative approach where we can roll it out and grow it as it goes. So thank you very much for your time today, and I'd be happy to answer any questions that you have.
Any questions?
I could add a few things if you'd like.
Introduce yourself for the record, please.
I'm Dallas Hurd, House District 2, Roseburg down to Grants Pass. And I'd just like to commend the director and the board and the former board members that were part of the group. I really was pleased with how we worked together. We really tried to push forward and find solutions to the issues. The way I looked at this and why I was willing to work as far as I did and concede some ground on some issues is, For the most part, the fact that we had a requirement for three times per year at two consecutive days, now we're reducing that to one time per year for one day, unless the program at a certain point, which I'm confident it will, starts to see demand from applicants across the state to push us to more days offered, which I mean, that's a great thing when that happens. So it was really me just trying to work with the agency to make sure that we stair-step this in is the way I'd put it, to make it a nice ease of entry into this new program. So, I don't know if it was mentioned, but Bill Cross wanted me to mention that OLCA has submitted a letter of support. So as far as I can see, all parties at the table are in support of this legislation and this slight fix.
Okay, another opportunity for questions. Do we have any questions? I guess I just have one question. So the practical skills test might also be, presented along with a written test in some cases. Is that true?
Chair Holvey, yes, that is true. It could be it'll be a combination to start out with of partial hands-on, and there will be some multiple choice questions along with that.
But different than the full written examination.
Yes.
Okay, that's
yeah.
Right.
And then Mr. Chair, if you recall, we now offer a class as opposed to strictly a test for your business license section of it. I wanted people to be educated rather than
go searching for all the little rules and whatnot. I want the pros to say, hey, this is what you need to know before you start doing business in this state to take care of our clients and whatnot. And so that particular modification for that part of the bill from 2015 simply has some multiple choice questions at the end, and that's really just to help. That was our effort to say, okay, maybe this will help folks be engaged. It doesn't. They can't fail the business class because of their answers, but I think we all admit it will definitely help them say, "Hey, I need to pay attention so I get these right at the end of the test." So I thought that was a good addition.
I'm just trying to clarify that it wasn't the original full written examination in addition, which was defeating your point. Okay,
it's
great.
A slight hybrid, I guess you'd say. Now,
all right. No other questions. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Don't adjourn the meeting yet. Mm-hmm. I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 4117. And you want to stand at ease?
The fiscal has just come in on Representative Buckley's. It's a no fiscal, so if you would like to go back.
You're so nice. Okay. We can go ahead and do this
one. And that one too.
So with that, I'll open a work session on House Bill 4117. Representative Barton?
No.
motion to the floor.
Chair Hovey, I move House Bill 4117 to the floor with a do pass recommendation.
Representative Barton moves House Bill 4117 to the floor with a do pass recommendation. Discussion? Seeing none. Ashley, could we have a roll call, please?
Representative Breda?
Aye.
Representative Doherty?
Aye.
Representative Escobar?
Aye.
Representative Evans?
Affirmative, yes.
Representative Fagan?
Yes.
Representative Hurd?
I didn't shout this
time. Representative
Noakes? Yes.
Yes.
I'm excited to be here.
Aye.
Vice Chair Hammer?
Aye.
Chair Holby?
Aye. House Bill 4117, Hammer received the vote.
Affirmative, yes.
Passed? Representative Hurd, I assume you'd like to carry this on the floor?
Yes, sir. Thank you.
And with that, I'll close the work session on House Bill 4117 and open a work session on House Bill 4038.
And Mr. Chair and committee members, let me remind you this was Representative Buckley's bill, and when he testified, we did not have the fiscal impact. It has just come
in.
Just came in. So you wouldn't see it, I don't believe, on your system, but it's a no fiscal impact. And as said earlier, there is no revenue impact on the measure as well. And there was the dash one amendment that required the member to provide their permission to have electronic voting.
So,
issue with moving it to the floor today, Mr. Chair, Mr. Vice Chair?
I don't.
Okay. Not for me. I think it's good.
So we have the dash one?
Dash one.
On 4038.
Sorry, there's a dash one.
The dash one amendment, Representative Buckley spoke to, it is the amendment that requires the member to provide their permission to have electronic voting.
Oh, yeah, yeah, okay.
All right. Which is a good thing.
Chair Holby, I move the dash one amendments to House Bill 4038.
Representative Barton moves the dash one amendment to be adopted into House Bill 4038. Any discussion?
Mr. Chairman, maybe we just ought to clarify what that amendment is for the record.
She just did.
Well, yeah.
You want to clarify it again?
Yes, that is the amendment that requires the member of the cooperative to provide their permission for the electronic voting.
Thank you.
Is there any other discussion? Any objection? Seeing no objection, the dash one amendment is adopted.
Chair Holby, I move House Bill 4038 as amended to the floor with a do pass recommendation.
Representative Barton moves House Bill 4038 as amended to the floor with a do pass recommendation. Discussion? Seeing none, Ashley, could we have a vote, please?
Representative Breda?
Aye.
Representative Doherty?
Aye.
Representative Escobar?
Aye.
Representative Evans?
Aye.
Representative Fagan?
Yes.
Representative Hurd?
Aye.
Representative Noakes?
Aye.
Representative Widener?
Aye.
Vice Chair Barton?
Aye.
Vice Chair Hinnemer?
Aye.
Chair Holden?
Aye. We're off to a good start. House Bill 4038, having received the required votes, is passed. And I'll close the work session.
A carrier with Representative Buckley. Alternatively, being that it doesn't even change the law, just clarifies that it could be a consent calendar.
I just have Buckley carry.
Okay.
I'm not sure that does anybody specifically recall that the rules have a consent calendar in the short session?
Never mind. No. Let's give it to Buckley.
Yeah. We'll let Representative Buckley carry the bill. So with that, I'll close the work session on House Bill 4038. That looks like it concludes our business for today. Nothing for good of the order. We will be meeting at 8 a.m. on Friday. With that, I'll adjourn the House Committee on Business and Labor. With that, I'll adjourn the House Committee on Business and Labor. Friday.